up on you.
How are we gonna restore 15 to 20 million jobs? I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, our broadcast serves southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And as always, I'm encouraging you to contact family and friends and invite them to tune in on the radio live, or they can go to the internet site at AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live. That's on Wednesdays between 11 and 12, or you can hear rebroadcasts of past shows right there from the Listen Live link. I want to say a special thank you to all of you that have continued to promote our message. It's really interesting. We've been promoting our message since 1999, which is buy American-made products and support American workers. It's a very, very easy program to listen to. A lot of good people are on here, and I want to say a special thank you to Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, and all of our guests that have come on to try to make our broadcast very special. As I said, 2022 is another year for us to increase our efforts as advocates for American Workers Radio and services with the Latin phrase we remember, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. And we're accomplishing that every day by getting people together to make sure that they do good things for the community, for our local businesses, for our major businesses, everybody who's trying to promote the Buy American Made campaign. Well, last week we celebrated a few special events, including Groundhog's Day. This Monday is going to be Valentine's Day, so I'd like to extend best wishes to everyone for a great Valentine's Day. Go out and have a good time. And as we gather for our broadcast on this Wednesday, February the 9th, I'm encouraging all of you to spread the word about our internet site. It's really important. And ask people, go out of your way to support businesses that are helping us, our local business, small, medium, large. They're all employing people. But the most important thing is speak up at the cash register, where you will be able to have your thoughts known right away to the person at the cash register. Ask for the manager. Just tell them you're interested in more American-made products being sold at that store. And a little secret I'm going to tell you again, there are more American-made products in circulation, but most of the merchandisers prefer to highlight the foreign stuff because they make more money. So if they can push aside the American-made products, naturally the people in the stores and all are American workers, people making sandwiches and pizzas and everything else. But we want to also make products, products that we wear, products that we use on a regular basis. We want to see that American-made label grow. Today we have a special guest joining us, and I want to discuss some of our concerns with him. He is well-known member of City Council in Philadelphia. He's a man with a lot of energy, and as just looking, I know our guest very well. He grew up in the Cobb Creek section of Philadelphia. He's a father of four children, a great husband, going to be celebrating Valentine's Day. He is also a person who worked as an assistant district attorney in Philadelphia. He joined the U.S. Army in 1988, served until 92, and became a second lieutenant in the Army National Guard. He's a person I'm always proud to refer people to. I will tell you that his staff always helps the individuals that we send to him, And David O., our special guest, is also a person who participates at a lot of community events. And being involved with the Ethnic Americans United in our Philadelphia area, I have the opportunity to see David at a lot of public events. And he's also a person pushing for jobs. And he's also got a special thing he's been doing. We'll talk about that as the day goes on. But he's going to join us for the entire hour. I want to welcome the very distinguished Councilman at Large of Philadelphia, David O. David, how you doing, guy?
I am doing great, Michael, and thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Well, we're happy to have you because we like to have people who have a lot of energy for helping our fellow Americans. That's the most important thing, and you've done a lot just by the basic history that I told people about a few seconds ago. You've done your best to be a best American that we could know. And that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get people to come out of our schools ready to move forward, to know what they would like to do. Now, I know the council hearings and all are going to be coming up regarding the school system and all of that. However, we've been talking about something special during our broadcast for 20 years. I've been pushing this mainly. It is getting the trades and this and the technologies back into our school districts so that people can have the opportunity to graduate with some focus on what they would like to do. They could try something in the 10th grade and say, yeah, maybe I'd like to do that, for, you know, as a career. And then maybe they would say no, and by the 11th grade, they could try another class. There's just no focus on that. And it seems that as all of the businesses left our country, we've lost over 77,000 businesses that moved out in the last 30 years. And at no point have our national leaders, I mean, local leaders like yourself and people in the legislature and even the governors can have some control on things within their state and cities. But it comes to what's going on in the United States, where you can do that from a national level. And I'm sorry to say that I don't find any legislation in the last 30 years that would say, let's take a second look at what's been happening in America with our education system, getting our young boys and girls in a trade or some specialty that they will be able to excel in for the rest of their life, and give them opportunities in our high schools to let them shine. What do you think of that?
I think you're absolutely correct, and I think it's been proven in many different countries that are at the top of the public education system, and they do exactly what you said. And the question is, why it's so difficult to get it done here in Philadelphia? You know, it's certainly difficult in other parts of our nation, but here in Philadelphia, it's very difficult. And so I'd like to kind of make a few comments about that, because I'd like to kind of explain it to your listeners, you know, in today's terms. Education is really about helping young people discover what they're good at, what they enjoy, and what gives them a sense of a purpose and worthiness. It is also important to help them to think for themselves, not to tell them how to think or tell them what to think. It is important to teach them to think for themselves, to stand up for themselves, you know, those type of things. And some children are gifted with music. Some children are gifted with speech. Some children are gifted with athleticism. Some are fantastic in chemistry. You know, they discover that. And some are very good with their hands. They're very good with constructing things, and they have a great interest in it. Typically what happens in the best education systems that are very successful, there is no a stigma to choosing something that you're good at, that pays you well, that you make a living at, that does not involve getting a graduate degree. or even necessarily going to college. And I think a great example is Switzerland, where 70% of the students do not go on to college. But they are well paid, they have good lives, they have the same social standing in their country as someone who graduated from college. Many go on to be very successful and to become leaders in society, elected officials if they choose, and some decide to go back to school. But it is really enriching the person the way they want to be enriched. In other words, if we take someone who's a lawyer, I'm a lawyer, but prefer to be a musician, they find greater happiness in being a musician. They can earn a living, all that stuff. Why should they not have that choice? But if, as you said, the school does not provide them the opportunity to have a chance at mathematics, a chance at music, a chance at chemistry, if they are not given a chance to see if they would like to enter the trades, maybe they don't have the money for college right now. Maybe they don't want to go to college. Maybe they will build a business. But providing not just a specialty school, like one school in the entire district or two, but to allow every child the opportunity that if that's something they want to pursue, to pursue it and to be successful at it, and then to have the chance, if they like, to return, you know, for an education because they appreciate it at that time. What we have discovered, and something that you've been, as you said, and as I know, preaching this message, something that a lot of people have discovered is that during COVID-19, a lot of things that we need are not made in the United States, and we suffer because of that. And with the rising cost in fuel and transportation, even getting them to our country is a problem. And then distributing in our country is a problem. And then the issue is who's actually doing this anymore or even wants to, since, as you mentioned, a lot of these businesses are no longer located in the United States. And it becomes a national security problem. And it becomes an environmental problem and many other things. For example, when people start talking about electric vehicles, you're not going to have an electric vehicle without lithium batteries. And lithium does not come from the United States. So you're importing the lithium batteries. There are issues about environmental concerns and things like that. And you are empowering other countries that don't have democratic values, that are dictatorships. You're empowering them economically. You're empowering them to gain traction, you know, in a very competitive and sometimes very dark world. And the less the United States is economically independent, and the less that our workers and our students and our young people have a bright future here, and the less we are able to impact the world, the less we're able to stand for a world where united, freedom-loving countries bond together to protect our individual rights. So these are all important things that you have been talking about, and I agree with you 100%.
David, thank you for that. I mean to tell you, Councilman, you are the best. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, David does not mind going out and mingling with the people when he goes to an event. Some of the elected officials come. They have a staff member escort them in and out so that they have no questions, no responsibility. But David likes to talk to the people, and this is what we are missing. So often I say, if our elected officials would only go into the communities and see what's going on, see the lack of jobs available. Yes, we have such a growing poverty level in this country. So many children are hungry, mainly because you look at ads on the television and you say, what's going on in a country that made things for 200 years? What happened to us? We were sold down the river by big corporations that wanted to make more money. Profit was everything. But the actual stability of the people who they depended on to be their customers was pushed aside. And David, this may have to be something you may have to introduce in the next council as the mayor gives his budget, to return to at least a 3-year trade class program, putting, you know, technology. There's so many new things that are available, But they keep saying, oh, well, all those teachers retired and it's going to be hard to replace them and all. And my suggestion has been in the last many years is then go into industry and pull people from industry to be those teachers. Because without us getting people able to build things, to design things, to make things that we need, it's difficult for me to hear how we are importing drivers from other countries because we don't have long distant drivers available, people that want to do the job. So they're bringing them in on a 2-year visa and doing things like that where we have people that are could be doing it, but it's the discipline. If they had the discipline in the school for the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, you'd have a lot better situation in Philadelphia. I would encourage you and maybe some of your friends in city council to propose that. Philadelphia is where our history began. This could be another historic moment in history where we say we're going to restore the trades and we're not going to just have one school or two schools, but we're going to try to get something special in all of our high schools because you know yourself, you have a law degree, you've been in the Army Reserves, you are in city council. You have many, many ways of looking at the world. We want to give our youth many ways of knowing what they would be best at as they are in high school. That's just a thought. David, I'd like you to talk with someone that I know you know very well, and that is the very famous and well-known Larkin Conley. Larkin,
oh,
say hello to David.
A legend from coast to coast. And a very good
How
man.
How are you,
and,
Dave?
I'm doing great. We miss you here in Philadelphia, but I'm sure you're enjoying the sun down there in Florida.
I am.
And no taxes, I think, on certain things, right?
Yes. I'm in Nirvana is where I am.
Oh, my goodness.
I have to tell a David O. story on myself. When he first ran for city council, I happened to catch an article in the newspaper, and I read it, and I thought, well, I can get behind this. And I have found historically, and your opening remark only emphasizes my feeling of how accurate you are on most of the issues that face this country. But at any rate, so year one that David ran, I went to work for his campaign. I can't remember your campaign manager's name. He was a great guy. And we worked together. This is year one that you ran.
Yes.
And you didn't make it. You missed by very little. We ran a second year, and you missed again. But in that definition of tenacity, he ran a third time and won. The only difference between 1, 2, and 3 is that on campaign 3, I didn't work. I on the campaign, I was on a national level for SCORE, and I couldn't make myself available. So the campaign manager said to me, well, we laughed so hard, he said, yeah, we just had to get you out around that table to get him elected. And so I'm as Lucky Rabbit's Foot in the reverse.
I think it's the opposite. I think you put your time and efforts in, and they paid off in run number 3, built off of your goodwill and hard work in the first and second race. So yeah, no, thank you so much for that. I'm always grateful to you.
I have huge aspirations for you. I mean, I really do, and it's further, way past. The mayor of the city of Philadelphia, you're very much needed on a national level. I just fell in love with David and his political position because he always put family first, even around the campaign table. He always had education very, very high on anything he ever spoke about, and that's what makes you successful. And if you want to be city councilman for the remainder of your life, Philadelphia will be a better place for it. I remember meeting as in my SCORE capacity, And it was after the campaign. David was a councilman at the time. He had a little affair where he brought the small business community together to give them as much as a pep talk. And here are some facilities available for you and some help that you can get. And all of a sudden, I was standing there, and a young lady walked over to me and tapped me on the shoulder and said, Mr. O said that I should, Councilman O said that I should come over and talk to you. And it was Patrice Banks. And that was the beginning of a relationship with Patrice that ended up in hers and my invitation to the White House. And to speak for women entrepreneurs for President Obama. And it, you know, I don't know. Everything David touches
turns
to gold. And I appreciate everything you do, and I think everybody in Philadelphia, I don't have to wish that they feel this way. I know they do, and I wish you the best of everything in the future.
Thank you, Larkin. I'd like to say that I think what you and I and Michael share is we're looking at the human being. We're looking at the person and who they could be and how well they could live and be fulfilled and what they leave us with in terms of how they do it. What is their pathway and how they can be empowered so that the path they take, because I think a great city is not simply buildings and roads. It's about people and how happy they are because of what happens to them in that society. And I think that's the key to a great city, a great school, you know, great businesses. I think it's really the human potential and the human identity that we lift up through legislation, through creating a better environment and making it safe and allowing people to move about freely and to take advantage of that thing we all love, freedom.
Freedom, yes. And in the city of where freedom began, I would like to see a lot of these things focused on. And David, we're going to talk about that other issue in the second half of the program. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to interest you in meeting a very special person, and that is Mark Andel. He's the founder of the Made in America store, and he is the type of person that should be going around the country and giving pep talks to people, because he took from a very bad situation and made it good. Mark Andel, say hello to our great Philadelphia City Councilman David O.
Yeah, hello, Mike and team. And Dave, great to meet you. And again, a friend of Larkin's, a friend of mine and Mike's. And sounds like we should have a beer together. But Dave, thank you for all that you believe in, all that you do. It sounds like you're right from our fabric. And, you know, hats off to you for being so involved and understanding the needs, especially now. I say one country, one goal. It's not an R&D thing. It's a common sense thing. But, you know, we've got a lot going at the Made in America store, so we're going on 12 years, Dave. And, you know, I lost half my business to China, but we represent, you know, skilled trades. Our brand stands for our veterans, and we're home base for Honor Flight. We just became home base for Gold Star Mothers for New York State. We got buses coming in from around the country. My Dorothy just went to the American Bus Association in Texas, their national show. She just came back from the Heartland Show of Ohio. She weathered in a snowstorm to get there. We never quit, but our brand stands for basically a true American spirit, and not an R&D thing again. But we're up to 10,000 products, represent 500-plus American vendors. And we support the entrepreneurs and vendors and, you know, just try to do the right thing. And I believe, and I think we made a promise to God that we're going to pull this off. So that's kind of our goal, Dave.
Wow, that's great. That's a great story and a great purpose, and sounds like a great business, too.
Yeah, we're rolling. We got four brick and mortars in Western New York, and we got our MadeAmericaStore.com. But I also own and run General Welding and Fabricating. Our motto is you dream it, we build it. So we're into a lot of different things, but our military work's on pause from Northrop Grumman. Our oil and mining's kind of dried up. So the pandemic, we're coming up on 2 years, this February here, and it's amazing. But, you know, we went forward, we pivoted, we adjusted, and we're finding ways to kind of trudge through it, even though the rapid inflation, the product shortage, and current times are all playing a part. I've got a vendor of mine that makes cheese, Yancey Fancy's cheese. They're really big. I talked to the owner, or my buyer talked to the owner the other day, and he's looking for 40 employees. He gets 10. They last about a week, and he ends up with one, and just a different culture these days. So we're trying to understand what's going on and always trying to come up with a solution. But, you know, a lot of things in these challenges times for you and us and our team here.
Yeah, it's interesting what is going on. Very disruptive in a very negative sense, and yet there are a lot of good people out there looking for a good place to work where they want to really make a commitment and settle into that a lifestyle of balance, values, and a purpose for what they do. So I do think we hear a lot about people who are resigning and it is challenging for many employers right now, all things mixed together. But I do run into a lot of good people. And maybe it's just trying to find how do we get a hold of them and put things together.
Yeah, now Larkin's sitting in warm weather and Rich, and Mike's a little warmer, but Buffalo, I had a -10 Saturday, so but I get fired up. They don't give me coffee, so we're in the dead of Buffalo. But I hung signs on every counter of my two plants and my four stores, and always looking for great people, because you're absolutely right, Dave. You don't get into the negative zone, you get positive. And, we landed one last week, and there's always that purpose, but I'm not following the new lead like you can come 2 hours late. We love work ethic. We love farm work ethic. But our people are out there, and we're staying the course on what we believe in, working hard and earning a living and paying fair wage and having good livelihoods. So that's what we're about, creating livelihoods.
Yeah, it comes to mind, and just as a just as something that I'm proud of, something that I did in Philadelphia. I introduced legislation, and it passed, and we have a veterans hiring tax credit in our city. And so, if you hire a returning veteran in Philadelphia, and they work for you for a year, you get $5,000 off your business taxes. And if you have them for 3 years, you get $15,000 off. So, if you hire 10 veterans, you get $150,000 for your business. And the reason for that, one, is because if we don't have an influx of good workers, employers leave. And that hurts our residents. If we want to attract employers and investment, we need a pool of good workers that many times need skills that are not available here in Philadelphia for the reasons Michael mentioned, we don't have the trades being taught in the high schools, things like that. So the military provides a great level of training and experience. And then we also want to help our veterans. And then the businesses, sometimes they don't know how to communicate with our servicemen and women, but they want their skills, and so it helps them to put money away to do more veteran recruiting, to get out there, and to put programs together for those great American servicemen and women who are integrating back into society, deciding where they're going to settle down. But maybe Buffalo could do something similar that would be a benefit to the community as well as to the employers, and thank our servicemen and women.
Yeah, I love it, because I'm all about the veterans. But, what you've done there is that's the answer, And so if they work for a full year, you've designed a tax credit of $5,000 a year for that employer, correct?
Up to $15,000. And some of our big employers, they create entire HR, HR subdivisions within the department to focus on veterans hiring, reaching out to them, accommodating them, including their families, building that network for those very valuable highly trained, committed people that are proven, but are often self, you know, very humble. They don't brag, you know, just trying to figure out how to build that communication for right. people who are civilians that have no military background, trying to understand someone who's sitting there quietly, humbly saying, "It wasn't me. It was all of us. It was a team." Right. So we have right. to kind of like get through that and say, okay, this is how that translates into a great worker for you. And yes. how that's going to help your company be able to prosper and pay those Buffalo residents more money and better benefits and reach out and sell more, you know, and all the good things that come from working together.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you for your service to our country. And my godson flew the C-17, so, you know, when he got out, I brought him in, and like you said, the transition, he was yes. an officer Air Force, and the transition from, you know, working for the government to becoming my ops manager was difficult, and, you know, a lot of people didn't respect him and salute him because he had earned that respect again, but we went through that training, but the training he has, because I believe training, we've got weld training going on now, but you're right, I mean, that's a great program. I'd like to get some more on it and maybe pass it on to our officials here.
yeah, absolutely. It works well.
I agree. And, Mark, you should make contact with the councilman because
we've got some good
that's
guys
something
here.
That has to, you know, start doing branching out because our young people, it's great that they're getting a nice graduation certificate at the end of the year, at the end of high school. But how about also having some skills, some background,
yes.
you know, some considerations? Well, I did that in high school, but I maybe want to do this. You know, I got an idea. Maybe I will open a small business. We should teach our young people also about business, make owning a business, starting a business so that they know, so that by the time they graduate high school, they have all those ideas. 30, 35 years ago, that's what you learned. Why they pulled these out of the school system, I have no idea. And in fact, David, I want to tell you this too. Mm-hmm. A lot of times our young people from the schools have to graduate from school and then go to a specialty training program for a year or 16 months in order to get a certificate in something that they could have had in high school to see if this is what they really want to do.
Yeah, you know, Michael, I think what happened, and I say this because I did a bill, and it didn't go anywhere, on really based on a study of best practices in public education, looking at countries around the world, you know, really not going to the wealthiest communities, but going to poor and like middle class type of communities and countries, or even poor, and see what they did. And a lot of it, as you said, has to do with meeting the human being where they are and where they want to be. But I think what happened is there came a point where some people who were smart and well-intentioned decided that every kid should go to college. And they made a system which basically, you know, kind of demeaned not going to college. And
right, exactly.
We're talking about kids who didn't want to go to college, were amazingly talented and gifted in other ways, and kids who could not afford to go to college. And so the program became college bound, but less than, for example, here in Philadelphia, it's far less than 30% that actually get into college, go to college, and a far lower percentage that completes college. And so I think that's a tremendous disservice. So that I think is part of what happened, and I think it continues today about trying to dictate to children what they should want, who they should be, how they should think.
Right. Just as you sign up for classes when you get into middle school and high school, you should be able to also make a decision as to, well, maybe I'll try this for 1 year, and if I like it, I'll go a second year. I talk to people and they say, you know, I graduated high school and college, and then I decided I am going to go for training to do what my dad is doing.
Right.
And I said, what is that? Heating and air conditioning. I thought to myself, That should have been something that was offered to you in one of our public high schools. We're spending money on many things in the schools, but I think, you know, reaching the full human potential is something that we really have to focus on in the future, because they're training people all over the world to make all these products, all these electronics. You know, when I bought my cell phone in 1998, it was still made here in the United States in Texas.
Right.
In Texas. Right. Today, I can't get a phone. I go into various stores and I say, do you have a phone made in America? And the guy said, it's been at least 10 years, 15 years. We haven't had anything made in America. And my question to him is, well, why do you think that is? And they said, well, it's just the way things happen. You know, I had a little bit of a discussion with one of the cell phone people, and they said to me, well, you know, we have so many employees available in those countries, and because we're supplying such a large area with these phones, we need to have them done in countries with major populations. I said, well, okay, that sounds understandable. However, how about we make phones in America for the American people? We'll certainly have enough in the country to do what we're using here in the United States. And the guy said, yeah, but getting somebody to come and set up in America is not going to be easy.
And guys, I just want to bring up that skilled trade shortage pre-pandemic was bad. Now, post-pandemic's even worse as we get out of this area. But our skilled trade workers, I want it to be a win-win. So our guys, we developed a matrix. We want an A-plus welder, A-plus fabricator, A-plus mechanic. And we're setting our compensation, our wages high. And I changed my philosophy a little bit because I want people to want to get in here, but everybody can't. We want the work ethic and that spirit. But we're training. But we allow them to get X's on this matrix. And if they want to raise, get an X. And it's a win-win for the company and the employee, because these guys are going to be treated like doctors. There's so few skilled tradesmen right now. They're not naming their price, but they're close to it. And this is going to be a hot area for all the schools. The metal shops, wood shops got to come back. And, you know, again, kids need a purpose. Dave, you just hit on it. They need a purpose. When they went college for everybody and put a stigma on the worker that works with their hands, that was a problem and still is.
Mark.
Yeah, definitely. You know, let me just kind of, if it's okay with you, just kind of give a couple of things out to your listeners that you know, they might kind of consider. One is when you say, what can we do about it? So the city government, being the city of Philadelphia, the mayor and the city council, we do not control the school district. The mayor makes 9 appointments, and in Philadelphia, which is the largest school district in Pennsylvania, the next 10 times larger than the next largest school district, the people have a very difficult time communicating with the school board. The school board does things that are inconvenient and I think at sometimes very detrimental to the students and to the community. But there's no accountability and there's very little transparency because they're all appointed by the mayor. So in order to do, for example, things like VET, like Germany does, which is, as you were saying, when a student starts to think about what they want to do, what they want, if they want to go to college or not, they get a choice of basically going to an employer who meets these qualifications and going to school for a portion of the time and going to work and getting paid for a portion of the time as part of the pathway they've chosen. And the employers love it. I met with 60 employers in manufacturing and things like that who completely agree with that program, want to do it. They'll pay the students. The students will get a better education in the real workforce than they could get, like especially places like Boeing and places like that. But then they'll get the theoretical things, you know, from our school, and it would offset some of the costs. Like in Germany, you know, the corporations and the employers, you know, pretty much pay for the vocational educational training program, which is top notch. And once they're certified in their area, they can get a job anywhere in Europe because they're so well trained. Mm-hmm. And if they're not picked up by, you know, a major corporation like Mercedes, there's certainly many people who want to pick them up because of their good work skill training and their work history and their discipline and their enthusiasm, things like that. But in order to do that, what I've done is I've introduced a bill, because we can do this as a charter change. If it will get out of committee, the people of our city can vote to say, well, let the mayor appoint four, but we're going to elect five. And we're going to have five zones, and we'll elect a person responsible for the entire education in Philadelphia, but accountable to us, elected by us. And we can ask them, like, what's up with the schools in our area? How come you don't have vocational? Why aren't you doing some high tech? You know, so they could tailor it to the needs that they want. So there has to be a legislative answer in the form of a bill from a legislator. From an executive, there's something they can do. They have to do that. But every elected official or politician has got to do more than say something. They have to introduce something or put something forward that is within their power, working with the experts that are the employers and everyone else. The second thing I want to say, based on what you've said, is I want to tell a story about a young lady who lived three blocks from me in Southwest Philadelphia, which is a poor, rough and tumble neighborhood. And, you know, her mother spent a lot of times making sure that her daughters, two of them, you know, stayed out of trouble, did well, things like that. And years later, I get a call from the mother saying, my daughter did 3 years in college to be a nurse, and she cannot afford the fourth year. Can you help us? And we have 2 weeks to raise this money to basically put the payment towards her senior year. And I was able to raise like $5,000 for this young lady, wonderful, you know, young lady. And it wasn't enough. And to make a long story short, I talked to her and told her about the military. And she met a recruiter, and she joined the U.S. Army, went to Fort Hood, completed her medic training, and now is eligible for college money to complete her nursing degree and to go on to graduate school, which would not have been possible without the military.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And you know, David, what you said is really very important. Allowing five members of the school board to be elected by the people. Because, as you said, I know myself, talking with various people, they say, well, the school board, you know, does their own thing. Nobody can tell them what to do and all. That's not good. This is not the way America's supposed to be. The people, the parents, are supposed to have input on what happens to their children. It's insane. I think it's a great idea. And that way, if something is proposed by the people that are elected by the people,
yes,
there could be a lot of things happening for the benefit. If there is some kind of programs that should be in there, America right now needs skilled workers. In our area here, we have to bring in people from down south who are mainly working on air conditioning to help the people up north because of the very cold winter that we had, and many of the units were running 24 hours a day, to bring people from down south to fix the heating units here in our tri-state area. That, to me, doesn't make sense. We should have more people in this area available.
Yes.
Not
yes.
to bring in long-range truckers from Europe, because mm-hmm. they're used to driving long distances, and ours mainly want to do, you know, more regionalized things so that they can, you know, have an easier life. There's too many things not being addressed. You are absolutely correct.
In addition to that, Mike, I just wanted to throw in, the only thing worse than all that we've discussed and how important it is for the local citizenry to run their own school board, the thing that I saw that was worse was when the state got involved. It's none of their business. And the closer we can keep it to the parents of the children that go to these mm-hmm. schools, the better off we'll be.
Yes.
Absolutely. Councilman, I want you to meet another member of our panel. He is very well spoken, very well known, and you and him would get along very well, and that is our very well known Rich Logis. Welcome, our councilman.
Hi, Michael. Good morning to listeners. And Councilman O, thank you so much for coming on. Michael is always telling us how he constantly invites elected officials to come on the show, and for whatever reason, they don't like to come on.
Interesting.
I look at this as anyone who has the confidence and courage of his or her convictions should not be afraid to go anywhere to defend those convictions. So you coming on here says a lot about you as an individual, though we don't know each other. Now, I'm also a Floridian with Larkin.
Okay, you're rubbing it in. Okay, thank you.
Okay, former New Yorker.
Okay, all right. You paid your way to Florida. You earned your stripes.
Yep, came down. That's right. You know, I've been to Philly many times. And while I won't consider myself an expert, it's very rare that I get a chance to talk to a council member of a large city. So I want to try to ask this question without assigning blame.
Sure.
Because I can appreciate the difficulties in managing a large city. I looked up on the 2020 census, and from what I saw, Philadelphia, which is usually amongst the most populous cities, you guys are now around number six with about 1.6 million people.
Yes.
And I think the voters of Philadelphia had incredible prescience when they voted for the Home Rule Charter Law back in 1951, which required that some membership on the council be of the minority party. You mentioned a few minutes ago about a rough and tumble neighborhood. And the question I wanted to ask, and this warrants a much lengthier discussion, and without assigning blame, What I wonder and think about, because I've actually studied urban areas for quite a long time, Councilman, and, mm-hmm. you know, for those out there who were just wondering, the city of Philadelphia, again, this is not to assign blame, but the city of Philadelphia has been a supermajority Democrat city council with only Democrat mayors for over 25,000 consecutive days. That's the actual math. So for 25,000+ consecutive days, there has been a super majority, including in the chief executive's office of the mayor, of only Democrats. So without assigning blame here, what is it about some parts of our large cities, the rough and tumble areas, as you call them?
Yes.
What is it about these areas that they just continually remain that way? You know, we look at a lot of progress. We see areas get built up. Then we see them maybe, they become dilapidated. Then they're built up again. But there's just some areas of large cities that never seem to get out of that.
Yes.
And I don't look at this from the perspective of trying to blame people. I'm not happy about it. But as a person who wants to understand, I wonder, what is it that goes on in these cities that prevent them from any kind of progress?
Yeah, I can give you my opinion, and I'll kind of put it this way. So let's start with this. City of 1.6 million people. And, we have a million registered voters, a little more than a million registered voters. 800,000 of them are Democrats, a little over 100 are Republicans, and a little over 100,000 are independents, so roughly, and then we have other parties. And that's a makeup of the city, and that's not to say you should or shouldn't be one thing or one thing's better than the other. That just happens to be what our city is. And what happens is, first, as Michael said, we are a Democratic city. The mayor for the last 50 years, all our row offices like district attorney, controller, sheriff, all that stuff, Democrats, except for one Republican, Ron Castile, who interrupted that. Our city council, 17 members, it's usually 14. Democrats and 3 Republicans. Now it's 14 Democrats, 1 Working Families Party, which is left of Democrat, and now 2 Republicans. So what is going on? Well, in our mayoral election, we had just under 300,000 people vote in the general election, which means 1.3 million people do not vote. And in the Democratic primary, because if you win the Democratic primary in Philadelphia, you often face no Republican. Or if you face a Republican, they're usually someone who became a Republican like a week before they decided to run, and they never ran for office before. So what happens is in the Democratic primary, there's less than 300,000 Democrats voting in the primary for the winner of the Democratic primary who goes on to the general election, and about 300,000 people vote. So a large portion of people who you would probably identify with as typical, common sense, reasonable, pro-economic growth, public safety, good education, you know, due process of law type of thing, they don't vote. And so that is the beginning of one of the problems. So who is voting in the Democratic primary, the most important actual election in the city, is about 250,000 people. And the most passionate voters are the most idealistic voters. And in this city, it's going to be very much beyond liberal Democrats. And so they have some very well-intentioned ideas, and some are very much about disruption and changing things to its very core. And some of them are, you know, they believe that the American dream is a myth and America is actually not a good country. And we have, you know, the underserved and minority voters that are hoping for much better, and that makes up, you know, kind of our Democratic primary. And so what I think happens is it's not just that people who are poor and underserved and living in violent neighborhoods with a lack of jobs and public, you know, cleanliness and things like that, because many of them are locked in their house. They can't come out after dark. They don't want to answer the door. It's violent. You know, they fear going to the bus stop because people get shot. We have a very high murder rate right now. We have a high armed carjacking problem. You know, they are not for unsafe neighborhoods. They are not for removing public safety and law enforcement. They actually want it. So who is making the decisions that affect their lives? Who is deciding that their schools remain in such bad condition? You know, who's doing that? Who is assessing their property, their houses that aren't worth much to look at, that now they're all of a sudden worth a lot more, and they have to pay these taxes that they can't afford? Who's doing all of that, and how come nobody's speaking out against that? And I think part of the problem is a lot of people don't believe in the vote, and it don't matter where it's from, rich, poor, middle class, white, black, Asian, Hispanic. They don't believe in voting, don't think it works. And the reason I think that happens is because they have been trained to run up to the 20-yard line, and that should be a touchdown. And that's what people do. They run up to the 20-yard line, and they say, touchdown. How come I'm not getting 6 points? And the reason is because they're voting party labels. If I vote for someone, be it Republican, be it you know, a Democrat, if I vote for that party, that person who comes from that party, this is what they're going to do. Well, they're not doing it. And other than talking about it, you know, what have they done? Where's the legislation, for example? If you're a council person, you could talk all you like, but someone who's not elected can talk. What they can't do is they can't introduce a bill. They can't fight for a bill. They can't fight for appropriations. They can't fight for amendments to the budget. If they're not doing that, but they're talking a lot, you know, that's the problem. People only hear, you know, the person talk, and then they say, well, they're for equity, social justice, jobs, fairness, health care, and they're of the party I like, and so I vote for them, and now the magic's going to happen, but it doesn't happen. So I think
really, sadly, I have to go back to the fact that, you know, our future is in our hands. And we cannot simply vote for a label because we like it and then say, well, you know, I don't have to follow up on that. If you prefer a party, that's great. If you like what the party stands for, fantastic. But make sure the person you vote for is not just talking, but doing, and that you follow through and see that they're actually doing things, because a lot of the problem is that nothing gets done outside of some verbiage.
David, wow. I want to say,
Can I make Michael a quick comment?
Yes.
May I, David, because... That was, thank you. That was a really thorough answer, and I'm quite impressed you were able to give that answer in such a short period of time. What I hear, and not to put words in your mouth, Councilman.
Yes.
But what I hear is that there's an actual grim irony to not voting, and that grim irony is that not voting creates. It creates a reality that the founding of this country was driven by, which is to fight the tyranny of the majority.
Yes. You know what? When you don't vote, you get the government other people want to have.
Very true.
And I think, Councilman, and you know, I say 25,000 consecutive days of only Democrat mayors, supermajority Democrat council members. And I think I would be remiss in saying that if such a city existed, a Republican version of that. There's no Republican version of any city in the country, of any even moderate size, that has numbers like that. And Philadelphia is actually somewhat on the lower end of that. Chicago's longer, for example, you know, as a city of who's been the supermajority. I'd go out on a limb and say that a supermajority tyranny of the majority Republican city probably wouldn't be utopia either, actually.
Right. I agree with you.
And as much as I dislike the two-party system, a healthy two-party system is actually better than a tyranny of the majority.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to bring up one more important issue with our councilman. But Councilman, can you join us in a couple weeks and we will discuss that other issue?
Thanks, yeah. Councilman.
Because this, our broadcast today goes to people all over the USA, and I think we did a lot of great discussions on things that are important. I have to sit down and talk with you again about introducing a bill to do something with getting the trade programs back in our school. But what you said about getting 5 people on the board elected is very important. This is what America is all about. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my special thanks to Councilman David O. You can hear a rebroadcast of today's show up on our internet site or on the station's internet site by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It should be up there in a few hours. Councilman, as always, thanks for a wonderful hour, and I'll talk to you soon. I'll see you soon. And everybody else, please do spread the word, because American workers need you. And this is another example of why it's important to vote. Have a great Valentine's Day. Until next Wednesday at 11, stay well and be happy.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Dave, Kevin, thanks for making this a great show.